self-understanding. One of the best ways to foster self-understanding in your children is to ask questions that help them look beyond the surface of what they understand. Why do you think you made that choice? What made you feel that way? Why do you think you didn't do well on your test? Was it because you were hurrying? Or is this just really difficult material? This is what one father did for his 10-year-old, Catherine, as he helped her pack for camp. He asked whether she expected to feel homesick while she was away. When he received the expected non-committal maybe in response, he followed up with another question. How do you think you'll handle that? Again, he received a non-answer. I don't know. But this time he could see her beginning to think about the question, if only a little. So he pressed further. If you do start feeling homesick, what's something you can do to feel better? Catherine continued stuffing clothes into her duffel bag, but she was obviously thinking about the question now. Finally, she offered an actual answer. I guess I could write you a letter, or I could do something fun with my friends. From here, she and her father were able to talk for a couple of minutes about her expectations and concerns about going away. And she developed a bit more self-understanding, simply because her father asked her a few questions. When your child is old enough to be able to write or even just draw, you might give him a journal and encourage daily writing or drawing. This ritual can enhance his ability to pay attention to and understand his internal landscape. Or, for a younger child, have her draw pictures that tell a story. The more your kids think about what's going on within themselves, the more they will develop the ability to understand and respond to what's going on in the worlds within and around them. Empathy. Empathy is another important function of the upstairs brain. When you ask simple questions that encourage the consideration of another's feelings, you are building your child's ability to feel empathy. At a restaurant, why do you think that baby is crying? While you're reading together, how do you think Melinda is feeling now that her friend moved away? Leaving the store, that woman wasn't very nice to us, was she? Do you think something might have happened to her that made her feel sad today? Simply by drawing your child's attention to other people's emotions during everyday encounters, you can open up whole new levels of compassion within them and exercise their upstairs brain. Scientists are beginning more and more to think that empathy has its roots in a complex system of what are being called mirror neurons, which we'll discuss in the next chapter. The more you give your child's upstairs brain practice at thinking of others, the more capable he will be of having compassion. Morality. All of the above attributes of a well-integrated upstairs brain culminate in one of our most important goals for our children, a strong sense of morality. When kids can make sound decisions while controlling themselves and working from empathy and self-understanding, they will develop a robust and active sense of morality, a sense of not only right and wrong, but also what is for the greater good beyond their own individual needs. Again, we can't expect absolute consistency because of their still developing brain. But we do want to raise questions regarding morals and ethics as often as possible in normal, everyday situations. Another way to exercise this part of the brain is to offer hypothetical situations, which kids often love. Would it be okay to run a red light if there was an emergency? If a bully was picking on someone at school and there were no adults around, what would you do? The point is to challenge your children to think about how they act and to consider the implications of their decisions. In doing so, you give your kids practice thinking through moral and ethical principles, which, with your guidance, will become the foundation for the way they make decisions for the rest of their lives. And of course, consider what you are modeling with your own behavior. as you teach them about honesty, generosity, kindness, and respect, make sure that they see you living a life that embodies those values as well. The examples you set, for good and for bad, will significantly impact the way your child's upstairs brain develops.
Whole brain strategy number 5. Move it or lose it. Moving the body to avoid losing the mind. Research has shown that bodily movement directly affects brain chemistry. So when one of our children has lost touch with his upstairs brain, a powerful way to help him regain balance is to have him move his body. Here's a story a mother told us about her 10-year-old son and a time he regained control by being physically active. 2 days after Liam started fifth grade, he felt completely overwhelmed by the amount of homework his teacher had assigned. I agreed with him, by the way. It was a lot. He was complaining about it, but he eventually went to his room to work on it. When I went to check on his progress, I found him literally curled up in a fetal position under his beanbag chair in his room. I encouraged him to come out, to sit at his desk and keep working on his studies. He kept whining, saying he couldn't do it. It's just too much. I kept offering to help him, and he kept refusing my help. Then, all of a sudden, he jumped out from under the beanbag chair, ran downstairs, ran out the front door, and kept running. He ran several blocks through the neighborhood before coming home. When we had him safely back in the house, and he had calmed down and had a snack, I was able to talk with him and ask why he had taken off like that. He said he didn't really know. He said, "The only thing I can think of is that I felt like it would make me feel better if I ran as fast as I could for as long as I could, and it did." And I have to admit, he did seem a lot more calm and ready to have me help him with his homework. Even though Liam didn't know it, when he left the house and ran, he was practicing integration. His downstairs brain had bullied his upstairs brain into submission, leaving him feeling overwhelmed and helpless. He had floated way over near the chaos bank of the river. His mother's attempts to help bring in his upstairs brain were unsuccessful, but when Liam brought his body into the conversation, something changed in his brain. After a few minutes of exercise, he was able to calm his amygdala and give control back to his upstairs brain. Studies support Liam and his spontaneous strategy. Research shows that when we change our physical state through movement or relaxation, for example, we can change our emotional state. Try smiling for a minute. It can make you feel happier. Quick, shallow breaths accompany anxiety. And if you take a slow, deep breath, you'll likely feel calmer. You can try these little exercises with your child to teach her how her body affects how she feels. The body is full of information that it sends to the brain. In fact, a lot of the emotion we feel actually begins in the body. Our churning stomach and tense shoulders send physical messages of anxiety to the brain before we even consciously realize that we're nervous. The flow of energy and information from the body up into our brainstem, into our limbic region, and then up into the cortex changes our bodily states, our emotional states, and our thoughts. What happened for Liam then was that the movement of his body helped bring his whole self into a state of integration, so his upstairs brain, his downstairs brain, and his body could all, once again, do their jobs in a way that was effective and healthy. When he felt overwhelmed, the flow of energy and information became blocked, resulting in disintegration. Vigorously moving his body released some of his angry energy and tension, allowing him to relax. So after his run, his body sent calmer information to his upstairs brain, meaning that his emotional balance returned and the different parts of his brain and body began to function again in an integrated way. The next time your children need help calming down or regaining control, look for ways to get them moving. For young kids, experiment with what might be called creative, loving trickery. For example, while getting dressed, your toddler says, "I want to be naked." Instead of replying in a command and demand style like, "I've already told you it's time to get dressed, put your clothes on now or you'll get a timeout." Try "move it or lose it." "I want to be naked." "Well, let's play a dressing game. Do a jumping jack and then we'll put your pants on." The fun of this game, coupled with the physical activity, can completely change your toddler's mindset and make the whole morning much more enjoyable for both of you. This technique works for older kids also. A Little League coach we know heard about the move it or lose it principle and ended up having his players jump up and down in the dugout when they got discouraged after giving up a few early runs during the championship. The boys' movement brought a shift of excitement and new energy into their bodies and brains, and they eventually came back and won the game. Chalk up another victory for neuroscience. At times, too, you can simply explain the concept. "I know you're mad you didn't get to go on the sleepover with your sister. Doesn't seem fair, does it? Let's go ride our bikes and talk about it." Sometimes just moving your body can help your brain feel like things are going to be okay. However you do it, the point is to help your child regain some sort of balance and control by moving their body, which can remove blockages and pave the way for integration to return.
Whole brain kids. Teach your kids about their downstairs and upstairs brain. Kids can pretty easily understand the upstairs-downstairs information we've presented in this chapter. Here's something you can tell your child to help get the conversation going. Your downstairs brain and your upstairs brain. Make a fist with your hand. This is what we call a hand model of your brain. Remember how you have a left side and a right side to your brain? Well, you also have an upstairs and a downstairs part of your brain. The upstairs brain is where you make good decisions and do the right thing, even when you are feeling really upset. Now lift your fingers a little bit. See where your thumb is? That's part of your downstairs brain, and it's where your really big feelings come from. It lets you care about other people and feel love. It also lets you feel upset, like when you're mad or frustrated. There's nothing wrong with feeling upset. That's normal, especially when your upstairs brain helps you calm down. For example, close your fingers again. See how the upstairs thinking part of your brain is touching your thumb so it can help your downstairs brain express your feelings calmly? Sometimes when we get really upset, we can flip our lid. Raise your fingers. See how your upstairs brain is no longer touching your downstairs brain? That means it can't help it stay calm. This is what happened to Jeffrey when his sister destroyed his Lego tower. He flipped his lid and wanted to scream at her. But Jeffrey's parents had taught him about flipping his lid and how his upstairs brain could hug his downstairs brain and help him calm down. He was still angry, but instead of shouting at his sister, he was able to tell her he was angry and ask his parents to take her out of his room. So the next time you feel yourself starting to flip your lid, make a brain model with your hand. Remember, it's a brain model, not an angry fist. Put your fingers straight up and then slowly lower them so that they're hugging your thumb. This will be your reminder to use your upstairs brain to help you calm those big feelings from the downstairs brain.